swing. You should have heard you knocked out jailbird sing.
Two Out of Bounds, William Clark and Miss Kelly Gramlich. We're talking brackets all day long. 654 Roar is the number, 654-7627 if you'd like to join us on the program. It was really not a great weekend for Clemson. Baseball lost 2 out of 3 to Notre Dame. Really lost in a game where Notre Dame was better on Friday. Came back and really reclaimed, I thought, at least a hold of game two. I thought Clemson was clearly the better team in game two. And then yesterday, it came down to the end. It was a very evenly played series. I thought Notre Dame played a little bit above their heads. I mean, statistically, the way they played all year, they fielded a lot better than you expect them to field. They pitched a lot better than you expect them to pitch. They didn't have to go to the bullpen until yesterday, basically at all. And Clemson was able to only take one game. So that's a little bit disappointing. Tigers go Tuesday, Wednesday against College of Charleston here and in Columbia.
Did you see the leprechaun?
I did not see the leprechaun, so no one said yay. No one said yay.
Thank you for getting that. Because if you said yes, I was going to say, what did you say? Did you put together any sort of sketch, perhaps, of a leprechaun?
I did not, but I did use the one provided to the police to try to search for the leprechaun.
Did you have your leprechaun flute handy in case you needed it?
You know who needed a leprechaun flute yesterday? Leprechaun flute. Don't be afraid.
Passed down from his grandfather.
Great-great-great-grandfather. Sanders needed a leprechaun flute with those god-awful green pants yesterday.
Sanders makes some questionable outfit decisions.
I got to call my fiance for just a second. She said that it looks like Sanders has on scrubs. It looks like she's wearing scrubs.
We'll see. Sanders is going to be there tonight. He's going to take some pictures for us. We're excited.
That's funny.
So maybe Leah can say that to Sanders' face. I'm looking forward to that. I texted Sanders. I said, are you coming tonight? Are you taking pictures? And he goes, I've been looking forward to it for weeks.
Okay, like, oh, so we're good.
So we're in.
All right,
we're
great.
Good.
If you're wondering what we're referring to, that would be the bracket tip-off show at Local Q from 4 to 7, or we're going to get there at 3:59 p.m. and then just roll into a show. That's going to be great. Where I will be there, Kelly will be there. Mickey is on the injured list today, the IL,
yes,
to use a baseball term.
Mickey is sick. And if Mickey is not doing the show, he's sick. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
When I didn't hear him this morning, I legitimately thought, oh, dear God, what is wrong? Because he never misses his show.
He doesn't miss.
So just putting that out there, that you know if Mickey's going to miss something, he's very ill.
Of course.
But he'll be okay.
Of course. So we have that. We have that coming up at Local Q, and it's 21 and up, but we're going to have a good time, and then we're going to watch the women's selection special after that, at the end. Where we figure out where the Tigers are going and where we're going, ostensibly, this week.
I'm
pretty pumped, too. Also, we have our bracket challenge, WCCPFM.com. Click the link, sign up. The winner this year gets 2 tickets to Las Vegas. Whoop, whoop! That's what I'm talking about.
Hopefully you hear this noise when you go to Vegas.
All right, have you thought at all about ways to fix this selection system? Have you thought about... I immediately thought about it. It made me mad that they didn't use the net really at all, ever.
Well,
they
didn't seem to not use the metrics that you champion, right? You have to use these metrics. Otherwise, what's the point? And then people don't know what to expect. And if you're told net matters, I understand that some Furman people, that was their frustration, is that they were told net matters. They were 40th in the net. You'd think you have a chance.
You should at least, it shouldn't be random. I'm not saying you have to use it straight down. But it shouldn't be random. It just seemed like they started using, like, if you put them on a scatter plot, let's say, using my stats background now, if you put them on a scatter plot, then it would be more scattered toward the end, where you had, again, teams in the 60s and 70s getting in, and teams in the 20s and 30s, or really the 30s and 40s, being left out of this thing. They didn't use it at all. Maybe it's a flawed metric and they shouldn't have used it. I'm not saying they should have used it. And basically all other stuff needed to go away. That's not what I'm saying. But if you're going to have a metric, then you need to go ahead and use it to some degree. What they should do, in my opinion, is use an existing metric to measure quality wins over quality teams. So we have metrics like that There's no need. If you're not going to use the ranking number, why rank the teams? Why rank the teams at all in the net rating? If a team ranked 73rd in your ranking can get in and a team ranked 33rd in your ranking can't get in, then don't use them. There's no need for them. What they should do is use an existing metric like BPI, like KenPom, a predictive metric. Use that to group teams. And then just give basically what we would call, if you go to warrennolan.com, you would call it the nitty-gritty or a team sheet. Just put teams in groups, the 1 to 30, the 1 to 50, the 1 to 75, home neutral away. Let KenPom set those rankings. And then decide based on that. This is what, all right, we're not going to rank these teams, but this is what Kansas's quad one wins look like based on the KenPom rankings. This is what NC State's resume looks like based on the KenPom. Don't use the net ratings to justify a team having a tough schedule or quality wins and all this stuff, but then not use that same ranking system to pick your teams. You can't do that. That doesn't make any sense. That's not logically consistent.
If you're going to introduce a new metric like the net, you have to live and die by it, right?
Yes. Does anybody think that Clemson, NC State, quote unquote, deserve to be in? I'm just using those as an example because they were the two highest ranked net teams that didn't get in. Do we think that they were hosed or jobbed?
Well, some people would say no because you know they had so many opportunities that they didn't take advantage of.
I don't think they deserve to be in. I thought those resumes were flawed. I thought there was an argument to leave them out. I thought it was an argument to put them in. Let's say that. Did UNC Greensboro deserve to be in? No. To me, no. They didn't. I mean, I don't think anybody who's left out has a gripe to get in. But I think the fact that they got left out over St. John's and Arizona State, I think that's where your argument is. Furman, for instance. Furman's about 41 in the net or something like that today. 41 in the net.
I'll find it one moment.
I mean, Arizona State's like 72, 73 in the net.
Furman
they get in.
Was 41st, yeah.
I mean, does Furman really have a grab? No. Just like Clemson and NC State, no. You knew what you had to do to get in. You didn't get it done.
You can make an argument for Furman. You can make an argument against them. If you can make an argument for and against, then have they done everything possible to deserve it? Probably not.
Right, and that's why I want to draw this line. I'm not saying that they should take Arizona State and St. John's out and put some of these teams in, and it's a no-brainer. But it does seem weird that they put Arizona State and St. John's in because they had quality wins in a metric that they didn't even use. They obviously don't prioritize the net, except for when it comes to showing you that a team ranked high in the net gives you a quality win. In other words, they didn't think NC State or, just to say this, they didn't think NC State or Clemson were quality teams to be in the NCAA tournament, but they were more than happy to give NC State or Clemson a quality win by beating the other in the ACC tournament. They were more than happy to give Virginia a quality win by beating NC State in the NCAA tournament, in the ACC tournament. They were more than happy to give Wofford a quality win, a quad one win over Furman necessarily, or UNCG a quad one win over Furman, in the SoCon tournament, but Furman's not good enough to get in. But a team that's barely a quad one win for anybody in any venue ever gets in because they played a lot of those teams does not make any sense. So it's not just that the NCAA didn't use it, it's that they used it in a way that's logically inconsistent and kind of bogus and wrong. I think it's wrong to act like you don't care about information except when it justifies preconceived notions that you already had.
If you're going to introduce a metric like the net, you need to use it, I think, exclusively, frankly. Because when you bring in all these other metrics, when you're still using RPI or you cite KenPom or you cite whatever, then you can make any argument you want, really.
Right.
I'm not saying the net's perfect. I don't think it is. But in order for it to be fair, you probably need to use one thing, at least, you know, for the majority of your analysis. You can use other stats, other, you know, you've obviously watched these teams play, whatever. But I feel like they justified putting in a team like Arizona State because their RPI was 44, but their net was 63. Their strength of schedule was really good in the non-conference. It was 43rd. That's probably why. But like you said, that's supposed to be factored into the net, and they were 63rd.
Don't tell me that a team gets a quality win based on a rating system that you don't even trust enough to use. Don't tell me about whether a win is quality or not based on a rating system that you're not willing to throw all other things aside and put them in the tournament based on this system.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Let's go to the Northern Communication phone lines. I'm glad we're on the same page on this. Paul in Greenville's up with us next. What's up, Paul?
Hey, Quark. I didn't want to change up the program too bad, but I had two observations about the baseball game yesterday.
All right.
And one, Bob Mahoney had mentioned that the choice of uniform selection for Notre Dame, which I thought was really clever, he said they were wearing all green. And it kind of blended into the green grass on the field.
That's so, very true. It was tough to see the numbers on the back of those jerseys too, I'll say that.
Yeah, so if you're at bat or, you know, you really, it kind of felt like you were just at scrimmage because you couldn't see the guys on the field.
I understand.
So I thought that was really good. And then once we tied up the game in the eighth, which was great, and we were all cheering, and I kind of slipped into the Cajun Cafe. Thank you for the gentleman who helped me with that. But then in the ninth, again, clever thing, and you knew it was pretty much doom at that point because I was listening. They brought in their closer, and guess what number he was?
I didn't notice.
What possible number could they have brought in? Thinking number 17.
17. Oh, yeah. For the day.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what? I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
And you know what? I was working with Pete Yannity yesterday, and normally he would point that out. Normally he would point out the symmetry and go into a nice diatribe about the symmetry of 17 on the 17th. But so I'm glad that somebody caught it. That was good.
Yep. Well, good deal. I didn't want to slow the roll in the basketball stuff, but I thought those were interesting.
I appreciate it, Paul. Thanks very much.
All right. See y'all tonight.
I didn't even think about that. All righty. I didn't think about that. Their closer, by the way, he's reportedly hit 100. And he hit 95 yesterday. Pretty good. That bullpen was pretty good yesterday. Benny's up with us next. 654-ROAR is the number. What's up, Benny?
Hey, how you doing?
Doing great. Hope you're doing well.
I'm well. I've been trying to call, but I just had my eyes worked on, and I couldn't see the dial.
Oh, man. Yeah. I'm glad you got in.
Well, there's just one thing I want to bring out, maybe two. First of all, when we go talking about these quality wins and how they did well against this school and this conference, Furman and Wofford, they have to play everybody on the road. They beat Loyola Chicago, and they beat Villanova on the road. And anytime they play one of these big schools that just absolutely rules the roost, they got to play them in a foreign place. No fan support. No media support. So it makes it a little more difficult to get these big wins against these schools that always schedule mid-majors at their place. They don't come to Furman. And I can halfway understand that. But by the same token, it's hard to beat these schools on the road. And when you do, I think it should count just a little bit more.
Well, and I think they have, and I'll interrupt you just to say this, Benny. I want to let you finish, but I think they have. I think that's part of the reason why they didn't just use RPI Top 50 or RPI Top 100 or RPI Top 150, that it's a graded system now where if you beat a team in the top 75, it counts the same. You beat a team in top 75 on the road, it counts in the same quadrant as beating a team in the top 30 at home. And I think one of the reasons they did that is so that it gives a little more flexibility to a mid-major or a low-major like a Furman or a Wofford or even a Lipscomb or Belmont or somebody like that to go and schedule a game against 51-75 on the road and get that potential quality win.
Well, you know, I can understand that too, but to get some of these teams to come to your place, you need a little exposure. And this Greenville News, Furman kind of adjusted their schedule. Like on Saturdays, they play at 4 instead of going head-to-head against Clemson, who plays at 7. Well, Clemson's, they'll have a page in Sunday's paper, and you won't know what Furman did until maybe a Tuesday. And, you know, recruits are just the bottom line. Anybody that does well at a job, They want somebody to know it. I mean, it helps power them on through the next game, next game, the next game. They get no exposure from the local newspaper. So, therefore, they cannot get these teams to come to Greenville to play. So they have to play them all on the road.
Right.
And that right there is a disadvantage, and I don't know how they rate them like you were just explaining, but in the end, they're going to count a win and a loss, period. And I think Furman had a good year, played some good ball, and beat some good teams. But you just can't beat the kind of teams they went up against, LSU and four or five more. You can't do much with them on the road unless you're some kind of super team.
Well, look, I get that, Benny, and I appreciate the phone call. We got to run. Thank you. I hope your eyes are okay. He said he had his eyes worked on, so we couldn't see the call. Maybe he's got them dilated or something, so he got back. Here's what I'll say about Furman. They did play well on the road against some of those teams. They lost at Wofford by 5. They won at Villanova. They won at Loyola. I mean, those are all quad 1 and 2 games. If you look at how Furman played against their top-line competition, their resume stacks up pretty well as a mid-major school. They were 1-5 against quad 1, which, again, that's about maybe you expect to go 2-4. I mean, maybe so. But then against quad 2, they were 3-1. Against quad 3, they were 2-1. So if you put all that together, that is, what, 6-7? That's not bad, but it's the 16 quad 4 games. If they had that same win percentage,
yeah,
and let's say they went 8-9, they had 2 more games in quad 2 and 2 more games in quad 3, and they split them, and they were 8-9 against those top 3, they might get in.
And some of that was scheduling. You don't know how good a team's going to be when you schedule them a couple years in advance. You just don't know that. But I'll say two things quite quickly. First of all, the lack of local coverage in a newspaper is not the reason why Furman can't host Power 5 teams. That's not the reason. And maybe it is true that they don't get that as much coverage, but, you know, Clemson is also Clemson, and Furman is Furman. That's just kind of how the world works. I don't think it's media coverage that prohibits that from happening. Normally, mid-majors don't get to host Power 5s. That's just kind of how the world works. And then secondly, and this might sound harsh, and again, I have nothing against Furman. I really like Furman. I have a lot of friends that went to Furman. I like all those people. You lost 5 games in the SoCon. Has a team ever, and I think the answer is no, Quack, if I'm missing something,
probably,
tell me.
You probably,
has a team ever lost 5 games in the Southern Conference and received an at-large bid?
This is the best Southern Conference ever.
I agree.
So I would say no.
I agree. Southern Conference is a great league, but you cannot lose 5 games in the Southern Conference and get an at-large bid.
I can't remember who I was talking to. It might have been Pete yesterday. Made a really good point in a conversation we had off air, and it was basically this. You realize Davidson left the Southern Conference. College of Charleston left the Southern Conference. Davidson's in the NIT. College of Charleston's not in either tournament. And the SoCon had its best year ever with Furman and UNCG going to the NIT and almost was a 2-bid league.
Yeah.
Almost was a 2-bid league in the tournament,
Furman,
without Davidson and College
and
of Charleston.
Even with all that I've said, you lost 5 SoCon games, you know, all these things. You played 16 quad 4 games. If you beat UNCG in the semis, you're maybe in, depending on what else happens. I think you had to beat Wofford once. If you could find, and you would have gotten your third shot at them. That's the point.
Right.
If you beat UNCG.
Right.
And Wofford didn't play very well in that tournament final.
No, they did. They kind of squeaked it out against UNCG there at the end. They scored, the last 12 points of the game or something like that?
Yeah.
And came from behind. We'll go to Kevin's phone call. When we come back, we're late for a break. We'll be back. Talk more brackets in a moment.
It's that time of year again when everyone is a basketball fan. Join 105.5 The Roar for Madness and Mayhem at Local Q, Monday, March 18th from 4 to 7. All our hosts will be there giving you all the information you need to fill out your bracket. Mickey, Zach, Brad, Ben, Quawk, Kelly, and Walt breaking down the brackets at the tip-off show, Monday, March 18th from 4 to 7. Local Q on Orchard Park Drive in Greenville. Remember, 21 and older. It's the tip-off show, Local Q on 105.5 The Roar.
You've heard talk about Harbin Lumber's strong customer service and elite customer support. They know that time is make or break for you contractors and handymen. Harbin Lumber will walk you through the project from start to finish, providing your order in full and on time. Harbin Lumber will partner with you and find solutions that will not create costly issues and problems later. Call today at 353-5053. That's 353-5053. Harbin Lumber Company. All they need is an opportunity. They will earn the rest.
At Toyota Beasley, every new Toyota comes with 2 years, 25,000 miles free maintenance. The Toyota Care Plan is a no-cost maintenance plan with 24-hour roadside assistance. And Toyota Beasley gives away $1,000 every 2 weeks. All you have to do to enter to win is test drive a car. If a used car is what you're looking for, Toyota of Easley has a huge selection of certified used Toyotas with a 7-year, 100,000-mile warranty. Call 855-2233 or visit Toyota of Easley, 5643 Calhoun Memorial Highway.
Your Buy of Clemson has weekly specials that are great tasting and great deals. Monday and Tuesday, kids eat for half price. And Tuesday is also benefit proceeds night for local charities. Wednesday is half price wine and $3.14 for cheese sticks. Thursday is $3.14 for pints and cheese sticks. And Sunday is student night. Get a pizza and a drink for $7.99 or a pint for $9.99. Great savings this week at Your Pie of Clemson, helping your community one pie at a time.
I'm Richard Thompson of Thompson & King Law Firm, and I believe that every person has a God-given desire to work. That's why I take Social Security and workers' compensation cases very seriously, because most folks don't really want to think they're disabled. They hesitate to file for disability, and when they're turned down, they hesitate to appeal their case. But they are disabled. If you're presently unable to work on a daily basis, even if you don't fully understand the cause, come see me. I'll take your case seriously. I know you do.
But Thompson King Law Firm, 222-0200.
90 days, that's how long it takes for the healthcare program to transform your body and your health. Walt here, and it's hard to believe we're already in March. So 90 days from now is June. 3 months will fly by in no time. Imagine losing a bunch of weight, reversing the symptoms of type 2 diabetes, high blood pressure, cholesterol, and sleep apnea in just 3 months. That's what the healthcare program does. You just need to book your free consultation at iDareGreenville.com. The HealthDare 90-day program is not a magic pill or hard diet. No gym memberships. You can even eat carbs and fast food. It's a lifestyle change, and it's easy to do. Their health coaching team and education staff gets behind you all the way. They won't let you lose. Book your free consultation with the HealthDare. Dedicate 3 little months to getting back to health. Do it for yourself. Do it for your family. Make the next 90 days your best ever. Book your free consultation with the HealthDare. Go to iDareGreenville.com. That's iDareGreenville.com.
If you want a Honda, Acura, Lexus, or Toyota, there's only one place to get your car, SUV, or truck serviced. That's First Class HALT. HALT stands for Honda, Acura, Lexus, and Toyota. That's all they do, and they do it well. And they back it up with some of the best warranties in the upstate. Be sure to check them out online. The latest specials can be found at firstclasshalt.com. That's firstclasshalt.com. Or visit them in Greenville at 1304 Roper Mountain Road or in Anderson at 4135 Clemson Boulevard. That's First Class HALT.
It's Out of Bounds on 105.5 The Roar.
And I can't believe I listened to these two idiots.
Now, back to Kwok and Kelly. Woo!
A couple things on this Furman conversation. All right, 654 Roars, and we're getting back to the Northwick Media Kitchen phone lines in just a second. One thing on Furman, though, the issue with Furman getting it was not a publicity issue. First of all, it's rarely a publicity issue in the age of social media where, I mean, if you paid attention to the SoCon tournament last week, every 15 seconds, Furman, UNCG, like ETSU, they're all putting up like, well, the... UNCG compared themselves to every bubble team. They like tweeted out a graphic every 30 seconds comparing themselves to every single team that anyone has ever had on the bubble.
I can't remember this much publicity for the SoCon since Steph Curry. I feel like the SoCon was, and maybe it's because we're in this region, but we talked about the SoCon a lot, and the SoCon earned a lot of respect this year. Everyone viewed it as a very good league. And Furman, I would say, received more publicity than ever. And they earned it by beating Villanova and beating Loyola. Those were huge wins. They were ranked in the non-conference.
I can tell you this about Furman. They were having to turn students away at games because people wanted to go in. They changed their student ticket policy this year because they wanted to make sure the students got into games. Too many people knew that Furman was good.
Yeah.
That was a problem for Furman. They didn't expect to get those types of crowds, so they had to adjust midstream on this stuff.
Sure. And look, we have a mutual friend that you've been texting with that is a Furman person, and I don't want her to hate me. But again, I have nothing against Furman. It's the system, and you know, some Furman people will respond, well, what were we supposed to do, right? And I get that.
It's a fair question.
Because the system is not set up, just in general, for any of these quote-unquote one-bid leagues or leagues that have historically been one-bid leagues to receive at-large bids. The system is not set up for that. So you have to be exceptional. You have to have an incredible year. Wofford would have received an at-large bid if they'd lost because they had an incredible year. UNCG, Furman were on the edge, and Furman had some incredible moments this year. But again, they still lost 5 SoCon games, and they still couldn't beat Wofford. And if one of those things was different, then maybe they get in.
I agree. Look, and it matters what you think the tournament is, too. Like, that matters. You know, last night I'm watching the Bracketology on ESPN. And they, of course, they are all in there. And I can't remember who was on it. By the way, did you see Calipari? I thought it was the greatest recruiting tactic ever. He goes on the show and, like, Derrick Rose's jersey is hanging on his wall. It's like the the USA jersey. DeMarcus Cousins. Who else? John Wall. Anthony Davis. Like, sitting behind him, he's like, oh, how'd that get back there? It was one of those kind of things. But he's like yucking it up with Billis and Williams and Greenberg and Reese Davis and all those guys. That was fun.
Let me just add this very quickly. It was the first time, and this was the worst quack. And maybe, did you get home in time to watch the selection show from baseball?
Yeah. Yeah, I was able to watch it.
It was the first time in probably my 25 years of life that I did not get to watch it live because I was driving and it was the worst.
It was probably all right. Did you find radio? I mean, I'm sure they had on radio some kind of reveal.
Nick called me and just read it every time they released each region.
That is funny. That's funny right there.
Because I didn't want to be on my phone, obviously.
Right. But here's what happened, though. They bring Vitale in, and it is a time-honored tradition that Dick Vitale is going to start yelling about the little guy. Where's the little guy? All these high majors, all these teams, they couldn't even win half the games in their league. And where's Lipscomb? Where's UNC Greensboro? How about Furman? We need some of these teams in the tournament. This is what it's about. The little guy, the Cinderella. What are we doing? And Jay Billis basically says, look, Dickie V.
Do you think Jay Billis secretly hates Dickie V?
I found out last night. He does Spock hands. Jay Billis, when he's talking, he uses Spock hands.
He does?
Live long and prosper. Go watch him. It's basically his fingers split in a weird way. It looks like Spock. Anyway, but he's like, Dickie V, look, is it about getting the best teams? Is it about crowning a champion? Which is what Billis said. He doesn't care about the bubble.
Right.
Because it's about crowning a champion, and the champion's not coming from a bubble team. Those are just teams that get in or out and get the experience.
They might go on a crazy run. They might make a Final Four, but these are the kind of teams that don't win the national championship.
Correct. And Billis is saying we need to focus more on the teams that have a chance to win instead of the teams that don't.
I find that a bit ironic because, A, Dickie V never does mid-major games, ever, right?
He did the West Coast Conference Tournament.
Okay.
He did.
That's great. And every time he does a game, he waxes poetic about how great at least one of those teams is. Like, yeah. I feel like I remember him doing the Auburn-Kentucky game, and he said so many wonderful things about Auburn. And yeah, Auburn's in, and they should be in, but Auburn is kind of the team he's complaining about. If Auburn hadn't won the SEC tournament, they would have been a lower seed. They went on a run and they deserve it, but that's my point.
There are also a lot of folks who were complaining about Auburn. Here's the deal with Auburn. Not a great resume at the top. They just didn't have any bad losses. And the resume was kind of,
Well, they lost to NC State.
And they lost to NC State, that's right. Which is a quad one win, but not over a tournament team. I still don't understand how you can have quad one wins over teams that weren't even like close to making the tournament, really. But here's where Billis made the point. He said, for Dickie V, is it about crowning a champion? Is it a populist tournament where you like the David and Goliath stuff, where we want to see David and Goliath? What's the tournament about?
The two things, I heard Jay Billis this morning, the two things that he was really throwing shade at the committee for, because he thought they were just excessive and stupid and they're trying to create storylines, was A, if Arizona State advances and wins their first two, they'll play Buffalo. So Bobby Hurley.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And then the Minnesota-Louisville matchup, which is just come on, you know? That's where Big you start fan. To be a little skeptical of the tournament, right? Because right. you're trying to, you know, and you put Michigan State in the East because it's advantageous in terms of geography, but you make the number one, two seed play Duke, but you know they want Izzo and Coach K. You can see right through all this stuff. You know they want North Carolina, Kentucky. Of course they want that. They want a Florida State-Gonzaga rematch. I've seen it all before.
Yeah, that... I understand Billis's criticism there, but he basically said, look, I think this is what Billis said, a point that he made to Dickie V's point. The last four teams in Arizona State and St. John's are not keeping UNCG and Lipscomb and Dayton and any of these teams out and Furman and all these teams. It's Prairie View A&M that's keeping these teams out. That's not in the top 200 of KenPom. It's North Carolina Central.
It's that large.
It's like 300. It's the fact that we have automatic qualifiers who shouldn't even, if we went three tournaments deep, they shouldn't even be in there. Those are the teams that are keeping these last four teams out. That's kind of the point
but
that he was making.
Are we ever going to get rid of those? And I see Billis's point because we know that 16 seeds, they might beat Virginia, but they're not going to win the national championship.
Correct. Yes.
But we still put them in. And I still think it's fun. I still think we need those automatic qualifiers. I saw in the women's game, I saw Radford lose their minds yesterday because they are making the NCAA tournament and they won the Big South. Are they going to win the national championship? No. But I still think we need these at-large bids.
Let's go to Kevin in Greenville, who's up with us next. We'll take a couple phone calls here before we get into the bracket. 654-ROAR is the number north of communication phone lines. What's up, Kevin?
Wow, y'all touched on so many potential subjects in that last 5 minutes.
We did.
I've almost forgot what I wanted to talk about. Well, first and foremost, I did see the Dickie V thing, and has he had, like, Botox and LASIK? I mean, he's when ESPN said, we need a younger, better-looking Dickie V. I don't know, but that's another subject. Auburn, are they this year's South Carolina Gamecocks from a couple years ago? Can they make that run? They got the same type coach. Chris Pearl, right?
Look, yeah, I mean, I think they could. I don't think it would be quite as shocking as that South Carolina team who had to beat Duke and certainly got to the Final Four, and we didn't expect it. And we can go more into this. I actually think as I look at Auburn on the bracket, I see them as having a difficult task of having to face potentially Kansas and North Carolina and Kentucky back-to-back-to-back on neutral floors that are going to be skewed toward that opponent. That's going to be hard to do, I think.
Right. And my last topic was my main topic, what I call Kelly on. We did this several weeks ago, and y'all did a great job with it. Now, after the ACC tournament, this was actually the first time I had seen Zion Williamson all year. I tried to catch Duke games, but it just never worked out. That guy was so dominant, I could not believe he's just like a high school kid. What if that body had been on the Clemson Tiger team this year? What would their record have been? And would they have even had a potential to win the ACC championship? Because he dominated North Carolina when he came back. So I'm going to let you talk about that. I really think that's a once-in-a-lifetime guy. And if you didn't get to see, if people aren't basketball fans, they need to watch at least one or two Duke games to see this guy, because that's what basketball is supposed to be about. All right, guys. Talk to you later.
Kevin, I appreciate it. Thanks very much. You know, I'm seeing this take more, and it's so right. Zion Williamson is the first Duke player that no one hates. No one hates him. He's not hateable. I mean, can you ever think of the best player on Duke's team that was like universally liked like Zion? I mean, even going back before either of us were born to Christian Laettner. I hate Christian Laettner. They make T-shirts and they made a documentary about it.
Johnny Dawkins? That was kind of before Duke was hateable.
Yeah,
or Mike Jaminski.
Yeah, you'd have to go
those
back.
Those guys,
a
but that's
bit.
Way back.
But even think about Redick, mm-hmm. Paulus, Shire.
You're naming all the white dudes.
Yeah. Even like Jay Williams, I don't think was universally liked.
Who hated Marvin Bagley last year?
I mean, I don't think anybody hated, but there were a lot of people who were ambivalent toward Bagley. I feel like he didn't. No one was like showing up to watch the guy play.
Last year's Duke team will go down as one of the most forgotten Elite Eight teams in the history of the world, right?
Because they didn't elicit any
response.
They're
followed by Zion, and they all left, and they were all, I don't know how many of them are going to really be great pros.
Think about the potential for outrage, though. Think about the potential for outrage. in a year where Duke is on ESPN every single night, and they are, for all intents and purposes, jammed down our throats. And really, other than the fact that we had to watch them play Army or whoever and beat them by 40, no one cared all that much.
Grant Hill, Texas is getting with Grant Hill. I don't think people hated Grant Hill.
Grant Hill was a good one. Grant Hill was a good one.
I'll say
but
this.
But also, like, Cherokee Parks on that team. I remember Cherokee Parks being a hated figure. He was also white. Basically, okay. If Zion Williamson was white, would we hate him?
Yes.
Probably yes.
Here's my point. And I stand by this. This sounds a little controversial. And I've said this to you. And I think it's more of a dude thing. And to be fair, the majority of college basketball fans are men. That's, you know. So that's maybe part of this. White guys hate white guys. White basketball players. No one, unless you're a diehard Duke fan, you probably liked Grayson Allen. And Grayson Allen did some things to make himself hateable. J.J. Redick did some things to make himself hateable. So did Paulus and all that. But as a white guy who's 5'8 and, you know, could never really do anything on the basketball court, if that's you out there, you hate a guy who's out there doing what, you know, he looks like he shouldn't be doing these things, right? He's
right.
Greg Paulus. What is so special about Greg Paulus?
Nothing.
He's not 6'8". He can't jump out of the gym. He can't dunk on people. I don't think people like to root for that, but they like to root for things that and players that absolutely blow them away, and that's Zion.
Texter says you don't have time to develop hatred for Duke players anymore.
That's
They're
true.
Always one and done. Gone are the days of hating the Alaskan Assassins, a Trajan Lang, as a Carlos Boozer from Anchorage.
See,
or
but who hated Carlos Boozer?
I didn't.
No one even hated Battier, really.
I think, yeah, Battier was
people hated Battier.
Battier is probably the blackest player that people hated.
I would say
probably at Duke.
The white Duke player that people hated the least, and maybe I'm wrong, of the stars, did anyone hate Mike Dunleavy? Was he hateable?
I don't think
he just
I don't
went out there
so.
And just didn't do anything and just shot the ball.
Those Duke teams, people might have rooted against, but those Duke teams actually were fun to
right.
Like that rivalry with Maryland, when Maryland had Steve Blake.
So fun.
Oh,
so
man, that Maryland team that won the title, that beat Indiana, that had mega knockdown dragouts with Duke, unbelievable.
There are recent Duke white guys that have made themselves more hateable, like Grayson Allen. Even Greg Paulus, when you're slapping the floor on defense, it seems corny, right?
Yeah.
And you're just, Kyle Singler, who just looks like the most normal dude ever, but can really score. The Plumleys and the Zubacs, these goofy looking guys that are just 7 feet tall. That's part of it. But you're right. Zion is completely different. And I read an article about this on the Undefeated about how Duke has become, you know, Duke in many years, and I'm not trying to say anything wrong here, Kwok, but for many years, Duke was seen as a majority white team, right?
It was seen as a privileged, elitist team.
They had more white stars than almost any other.
It wasn't blue
program.
Collar, right?
Yeah, and now, if they have white guys, they're role players. You know, Grayson Allen was a star, sure, and he was their leading scorer a few of those years. But I mean, this year's Duke team, all their best players are black guys, and I think that makes Duke cooler in some ways.
It does, to some degree. It does. Duke had become not cool. Like in the mid 2000s,
cool,
they were hateable
John
and
Shire.
Not cool.
John
right.
Shire's a good. He's a really, really good college basketball player. He won a national championship. He's not cool.
My dad made two good statements on this. First statement: Zion is liked so much because he plays so hard
he
and so
does.
Clean.
We don't say
he's
enough.
He's not dirty and he works hard.
We do not. And I was saying this the other day, Kwok. We do not talk enough about how hard Zion plays. He's the perfect mix of he's the most talented player on the floor, and he's also playing the hardest.
Yeah.
Which is so rare.
Second thing, the stuff Duke does that when other people do it, we don't hate as much. He says this, our Clemson girls slap the floor. Duke slapping the floor. Wojo slapping the floor is in my childhood brain for... You've got to be kidding me when I was like 7. Are you serious right now, Wojo? There's no need for this.
And Paulus used to slap the floor all the time.
Yes. So I think I had this conversation with somebody at Clemson. I think Clemson would be like a 5 seed with Zion this year. I think they'd be like a 5 seed. I think they'd be really, really good. I mean, we'll talk about this on the other side because I want to get to the bracket too and want to get to Nashville guy. Stay with us. More to come out of bounds in a moment.
Up next, it's Don Munson with your daily Tiger update, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union on the Clemson Tigers Network.
Relax, Clemson students, faculty, staff, and IPTE members. You can join Founders Federal Credit Union with convenient services like the Founders app with mobile deposit, Founders online, and online applications. You can spend less time in our office and more time cheering on your Clemson Tigers. For product information, visit foundersfcu.com. Not a Founders member? Visit relaxjoinfounders.com to see if you qualify for membership. Founders Federal Credit Union is federally insured by NCUA and a proud partner of Clemson Athletics.
Well, hi, everybody, and welcome to the show. Clemson men's basketball returns to postseason play as they have accepted a bid to play in the 2019 National Invitational Tournament. They will be a 2 seed and will face a number 7 seed in Wright State in Little John Coliseum Wednesday night, March the 20th at 7 p.m. Now, Wright State finished 21-13 overall, 13-5 in the Horizon League this season, as Loudon Love leads the Raiders in scoring 15.1 points per game and also leads the team in rebounding at 8.2 rebounds per contest. This will be Clemson's 17th appearance in the NIT. The program 18-16 all-time in the event, and advanced to the championship final twice, once in 1999 and once again in 2007. Clemson has gone 12-4 in Little John Coliseum in NIT play, and they've won 12 of the last 13 at home heading into Wednesday night's contest. General public tickets are just $12 for the contest. Clemson students get in free with a valid ID. All tickets on sale now at clemsontigers.com/tickets, and they'll also be available at the athletic ticket office Monday, 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Our report brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union, the official credit union of the Clemson Tigers. Relax with Founders Federal Credit Union.
It happens every time. When a hailstorm hits, there's an increase of people who want to take your money for roof repairs. Problem is, many of them are just trying to take advantage of you and don't really know what they're doing. Gilstrap Roofing has been around for decades. Trust Gilstrap Roofing to handle the repairs and deal with the insurance. Just because someone knocks on your door with a card that says they're a roofer doesn't mean they'll do quality work at a reasonable price. Call Gilstrap Roofing, 269-1232.
S.H. Carter Development, Inc. is a family-owned construction and demolition company located in Greenville, South Carolina. The last name of Carter is directly associated with quality construction, and with over 50 years of experience, S.H. Carter Development, Inc. strives daily to meet the expectations that are associated with the family name. S.H. Carter is a licensed general contracting firm that specializes in demolition and roll-off container rental in the upstate South Carolina area. S.H. Carter prides itself on honesty and integrity to achieve a high standard of work. S.H. Carter, Inc.
No rules, just out of bounds on 105.5, The Roar.
Everybody thinks they have style and everybody thinks they're funny.
Now, back to Kwok and Kelly.
This is how we do it.
Hour two continues, out of bounds. We're talking brackets here today. Really, we're talking a lot of process. We're going to talk a heck of a lot of bracket from 4 to 7 at Local Q in Greenville. Come by and see us for our bracket tip-off show. We've got printable brackets to fill out. You can enter into our bracket challenge to win a trip for two to Vegas.
What is your favorite Local Q food item? What are you going to get tonight?
Oh, man. You know, I love the barbecue.
Yes, I knew you were going to say that.
I had barbecue yesterday. I might have to branch out a little bit. I'm a big fan of their barbecue, though. Last time I went there, what did I get last time? I watched the North Carolina game there a couple weeks ago. I don't know.
Well, you can pick from your three main food groups. Yeah. Did you get chicken fingers?
Chicken fingers.
Did you get a barbecue sandwich, or did you get a burger?
Burger. One of those three will happen tonight. You know my food groups.
Their chicken wings are really good, too.
Here's a text I have from a buddy of mine, okay? He says this: Zion's unselfish competitive attitude and will to win has the ability to change the NBA and bring it back to the Jordan, Reggie Miller.
A lot of pressure on Zion.
Patrick Ewing, those kind of days. The competitive nature of Zion.
It feels like if Zion plays this hard in the NBA, people will look at him funny because they don't play that hard, you know? They'll probably have to tell him, like, you can't play this hard every night. You'll get hurt.
People talked about Bryce Harper loafing Remember the guy that like wouldn't let it go that sent the article from like 3 years ago when Bryce Harper got benched one time for not running out to first, but missed all the stories from earlier in his career when he was like 20 and he'd run into walls in practice? And the Nationals, there were a number of stories written at the time where the Nationals were like, dude, you can't run into walls and dive in practice. You got to take care of yourself because you're missing games. To me, that's Zion. That's like, dude, chill. Like all the NBA guys are going to be like, bro, it's fine. Like you're the number one pick. He goes to the Knicks or somebody next year, all the vets are going to be like, dude, it's okay. You don't have to earn your spot right now. Like, it's fine.
What's so interesting about Zion, and you're right, we have not talked about his, just the level of intensity he brings and how hard he plays enough.
Effort and passion.
We have like, not. And like we need to talk about it more because it's awesome.
Honestly, he is the one and done that seems like he's not making... Almost like he's got to be coaxed into a business decision. Like, if it were up to him, he'd stay there, and he'd play for the love of it forever and ever. That's the way he approaches the game.
What's interesting, though, is that I think he'll go down as one of the most liked Duke players ever for non-Duke fans. But will Duke fans still say, well, he was a one-and-done? You know, Duke fans still
if Duke
love
fans are
those,
saying
those
that,
four-year players.
They missed it. If Duke fans are saying that, they missed
it. When you don't get 4 years of someone, though, it's different. And, of course, I mean, if you got 4 years of Zion, it would just be, it would be incredible.
Right. I mean, you want four-year guys. Those are your favorite players. Your favorite players are the four-year guys. But, I mean, I'm going to say this. Jim Boeheim said this, okay? And I'll let his word stand alone, then I'm going to go to phones here. He said, Zion Williamson, something to the effect of Zion Williamson is not the best player I've ever seen, but he does things I've never seen before.
Yeah, he's almost the most unique, right?
Yes.
Or just different. He's different.
He's one of the best college basketball players ever. He might be the best college basketball player I have ever seen, especially at that size. Most of the greatest players I've ever seen in college were built like point guards or wings. Not a lot of bigs, because when bigs were a big deal, 80s, I'm thinking Ewing, Olajuwon, Samson in Virginia. Like when you
Leitner.
Have great, right, when you have great bigs, those that's like 80s, early 90s. That's when I was either not born or too young to understand what that was. Like the first teams that I remember are like mid-90s. Again, where Wojo was the guy at Duke and not Leitner.
Boeheim also said that he struggled to compare him to someone. I've heard this comparison recently, and I think it fits somewhat.
If you say Julius Randle, I'm out of here.
No, because you're the literally the only human being that said that.
I said between LeBron and Julius Randle. That's what I said.
Blake Griffin.
I see that one.
College Blake Griffin.
I see that one.
His best year, which was probably, I think he stayed 3 years. I think his sophomore year is probably his best year, numbers-wise and whatnot, because the athleticism is unparalleled. Blake Griffin played hard. Not known for their shot, but can shoot it. I see a lot of that. I see a lot of Zion and Blake Griffin and vice versa.
Blake Griffin's a
and
very...
And they're somewhat undersized to be, you know, they're not a five, they're a four. But what? How tall is Blake Griffin? 6'8"? 6'9"?
Blake Griffin's 6'10".
Really?
6'10", 250.
6'10"?
Yep. He's listed 6'10", 250.
Okay, so Zion's shorter.
Blake Griffin is a four-time All-NBA player. He was a rookie of the year in 2010-11.
Mm-hmm.
He's been to 6 All-Star games.
Yeah.
Blake Griffin is a poor man's Zion Williamson. Let's go to Nashville guy who's up with us next. What's up, Nashville guy?
Hi, what's up, Quark and Kelly? Just a couple quick comments. All the young kids out there watching college basketball, play like Zion does. He plays with more – I couldn't agree with you more. He plays with more effort, more passion than most people you see at that age in a college game. I mean, I'm no Duke fan. I can't stand him, but he is a very fun guy to watch. But just amazing to watch. And on to my question. Every year there seems to be a 5-12 upset in the tournament. I have a family member that graduated from Liberty University. And without giving too much away, I know you got your show tonight, and I hate that I'm not going to be able to make it. But I'm thinking that maybe – Liberty can upset Mississippi State. I think Mississippi State only really has one good player, and these coaches know each other. They actually coached against each other in the Big Sky in the 90s, and I think they split the series. And I know that Liberty plays very slowly, almost as slow as Virginia does. And just kind of getting your thoughts on that, maybe maybe that without giving away your picks, some thoughts on that 5-12 matchup, and I'm going to get out of here, man. I got to go, but I love the show. Listen every day. Have a good one, guys.
Thanks very much, Nashville guy. We appreciate it. I'm going to pick 1-12, and it's not Liberty.
Same.
Okay, and I'm just going to leave that
I
there.
I like Liberty, though.
Here's the thing about 5-12, all right? We talked about this last year. 5-12 is really not the upset anymore. Do you know that it's the 11 seeds over the sixes?
Yes.
11 seeds, I can't remember how many years. I'd have to go back and look. ESPN did a great breakdown of every single matchup. Every matchup for every... I'll find it here in a second.
Here.
Back to a certain number of years, the 11 seed actually has a winning record against the 6 seed.
Here's the stat I wrote down for tonight, and this was really interesting. Since 2010, ones, twos, threes, and fours have advanced to the Sweet 16 the most, right?
Yes.
After the 4 seeds, the next seed that has advanced to the Sweet 16 the most is the 11 seed.
Yes.
The 11 seeds have advanced to the Sweet 16 11 times since 2010. So that's more than once per year.
What year was that?
This is just overall. 11 seeds have 11 Sweet 16 appearances since 2010.
Since 2010. Okay. Yeah. Since 2010, 11 seeds have a 56% winning percentage against 6 seeds. So it's actually more likely than not, based on experiential probability, that 11 seeds are going to beat 6s.
And it's tough, too, because now you have those play-in games with the 11. So a lot of people in their brackets, some, like our bracket challenge, they skip the play-ins, so you don't pick those. So
right.
Then you also, common sense thinks, well, these guys just played. They've got to travel. They've got to go play a pretty good team in a 6 seed. They're not going to win it. But Syracuse did it as an 11 seed, made it all the way to what, the Final Four, didn't they?
Yes.
We've seen it happen every year that an 11 seed has done something from a play-in.
Since the, and I'm trying to think exactly when it was. In the last X number, it was to say X number of years, if an 11 seed is made to the Sweet 16, all but one time, it's been the Wednesday winner, not the Tuesday winner. So that would be the winner of Arizona State, St. John's, and not the winner of Belmont Temple this year.
Hmm.
If that's the case, ESPN did that one. This is the 5-12 upset, okay? The 5-12 upset that everyone talks about. Only 5 times since 1985. I'm reading this straight from ESPN.com. I don't know who put this together, but it was great. I'll scroll back up.
I read that too. It was awesome.
Only 5 times since 1985 has at least one 12 seed failed to defeat a 5 seed in a single tournament. Only 5 times. However, 2 of those 5 instances have occurred in the past 4 years. And one of those was last year, 2015, 2018. Overall, number 5 seeds have won 65.4% of matchups with number 12s.
That's still low for a 5-12.
Right. It's about 2-1, but we saw a lot more 12-5 upsets. I think there are 2 reasons why. One is, I think the tournament has gotten smarter with analytics, whereas before, you would have 12 seeds, like the Villanova team, for instance, that beat Clemson in a 12-5 back a number of years ago with Oliver Purnell. Okay? That team was super talented, underachieving a bit, maybe a last 4-in type team, but very talented. They would be, I would say, maybe like if Texas was full strength, like a Texas-type team from this year. It was a pretty good team. Maybe a Clemson from this year who might get in as a 12 seed and beat a 5. You had a lot of teams like that. I think the way that we see teams is a little different now, where we give a little more weight to how good a team is as opposed to just looking at the RPI going, RPI's not very good, that's a 12 seed. You saw a lot of really strong automatic qualifiers on the 12 line, and you saw some good, maybe underachieving or maybe had an injury for part of the season at larges that were on the 12 line against a 5. Now, because those at larges have pushed up to an 11 seed, it's been more the automatic qualifiers. And so you're more likely to have a quality at large at an 11 seed now, what you used to have as a 12. So that's why the 6-11 matchup is the new 5-12 matchup, and why if you don't pick a 12 seed but you pick an 11 seed, you're probably doing okay. As it stands right now, Kelly, I think I'm taking 1-11 seed and 1-12 seed. I think.
I'm taking 1-12. I'm probably going to take an 11, but I also need to see who wins the play-in game.
I don't get that. The family pool kills me because I don't get that luxury.
I'm not just going to take a team I don't know who they are. I'll tell you this. There's one 11-6 that there's no way in the world I'm taking the 11 because I have the 6 seed going to the Elite 8.
Really?
So
you have a 6 seed in the Elite 8?
I do.
You realize, too, that in the last 8 years, there's been a 7-seed or worse in the Final Four.
Right. So and I don't have a 7-seed or worse in my Final Four, but I only have one 1-seed.
You don't have, wait, you only have one 1-seed?
Yep.
Hmm. I've had two different Final Fours, and I think I've had several different combinations of.
I've had seven different teams in the Final Four since last night.
Like seven different teams. I don't know that I'm going to. That's why I say, by Monday afternoon, I don't know what my bracket looks like. I don't know who's going to the Final Four. Are you kidding me right now?
Last year, I feel like we had this conversation that the bubble was weak, somewhat weak, and we thought it was going to be chalky. And it was not.
It was not chalky. Well, a couple brackets were, but a couple were chaos. Like the Virginia bracket
was
chaos.
There
was
a lot of chaos.
Yeah.
And but the Final Four still ended up relatively chalky. And the champion was. The champion was the number one overall seed. Or no, actually it wasn't. Villanova wasn't. The last time a number one overall seed won, Kwok, was in 2013, which I thought was really interesting. And that one actually doesn't even count because it was Louisville. So.
You know Ben Howland's record in the NCAA tournament since the back-to-back Final Fours at UCLA? About the Mississippi State Liberty question. He is 2-3 since that point. Has not gotten past the round of 32. Has not gotten past the round of 32 since 2010-11. He lost in the first round before he got let go by UCLA after going 25-10.
They'd take that now.
They certainly would take that now, 100%. They might try to hire Howland again. They probably should. Hour 2's in the books. More in the bracket on hour 3.